Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Potts back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday evening with me. I really appreciate it. Hey, today we're going to be talking about a very sensitive area. I told you last week that this week we would be talking about issues with children. It's a very sensitive issue. The issue was brought up to me a couple of weeks ago, so I'm going to be giving you some information today and talking about the sad part of our society that has to do with violent crimes against children, also about online predators, etc., and some other things. One would think in this day and age that we should be past all of this, but unfortunately we're not. So we'll be talking about that. It's going to have to do with child abuse, child abductions, child sex trafficking, online predators, and why parents why parents abuse their children. Believe it or not, there's a lot of information out there on that as well. But to get started, let's, as always, I like to start off with some emails. So the first one, Jim, I looked you up on the internet and saw you were a published author as well. I found your book, Right to Counsel, on Amazon and bought it. It was a great read. Just wanted to let you know. Signed, Helen from Sacramento. Yeah, Helen, I appreciate that. For those of you who do not know, yes, I am a published author. My first book came out 2008, Right to Counsel, and that actually had to do with me assisting an attorney at that time when I was in law school regarding a sexual predator, some of the things that he had done. So the book is out there. It is a very good read, if I do say so myself. And if you have a chance, pick it up, and that would be fantastic. Still on Amazon, etc. Anyway, Helen, thank you so much for buying it and letting me know. All right, the second email. Jim, I just wanted to say that I think it's great that your shows are all archived. When I miss one, I can go back and listen to it. Keep up the good work. Jennifer from North Carolina. Yeah, these shows can be downloaded on your cell phones. You know, there's an app out there for this and all of that. So if you do miss a show, you can download the shows, and as you're driving around, doing exercising, doing whatever you do, and then you can always catch up on some of the archive shows. And all of the shows, by the way, when you go to LA Talk Radio, we'll have them all broken down by the topics from each week. So you'd be able to see which one may pique your interest and then go ahead and download that. And by the way, as always, if you want to call in, have any comments you'd like to make or questions to ask, give me a call at 818-602-4929. All right, get those pens ready because I will be giving you that number again. But it's 818-602-4929. Or you can go to the website, and it's posted on the website, on the LA Talk website as well. And you can also send me emails, as so many people do, listenup@pottsassociates.com. And if you want to get my blog or email blast about upcoming show topics, just text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and then enter your email address. Again, text Potts, P-O-T-T-S, Associates, and text that to 22828 and enter your email, and then you'll get the upcoming show topics for the following week. Okay, let's go to that third email. Jim, by any chance, did you read about the parents in Perris, California that abused their 13 children? It was Louise and David Turpin. Why do people abuse their children? Well, I'm going to have some information on that. It should not only be criminal, it should be a sin as well. Signed, Sandra from Temecula, California. Yes, I actually am very aware of that particular case. For those of you who do not know about that, Perris is a small rural area. And this apparently is what happened. This was back in January, but there's been some ongoing discussions about this apparently. But it was about parents who had 13 children, Louise and David Turpin, and that they allegedly had 13 children living in squalid conditions that just tripped out the investigators when they went out there. They found out about it because one of the children, who was 17, was concerned about her younger brother and sister, who were upset and crying. They were chained to the bed, and she ended up calling 911 and basically asking for help. Now, these two individuals are facing a long list of charges. They're actually charged with 12 counts of torture, 7 counts of abuse of a dependent adult, 9 counts of child abuse or neglect, and 12 counts of false imprisonment. Now, apparently, David also faces 1 count of lewd acts on a child under the age of 14 by force, fear, or duress. Now, on top of that, they also threw in some other charges on him. He was hit with 8 counts of perjury for filing false affidavits with the statement with the Department of Education, stating that his children were getting an education and a full-time education at a private day school. And he had filed these affidavits from 2010 to 2017, and it simply was not true. Now, are you ready for this one? It always tickles me when people get caught doing these kind of things where they don't own up, fess up, and just, you know, be accountable. Now, because despite all of the evidence against them, what do? They plead not guilty to all 50 charges. Not guilty. How can you do that? You already know what you've done. But at any rate, they're being held on, just to let you know, they're still incarcerated. They're being held on $12 million bail each. And if convicted, they're looking at life behind bars. And you know what? That's probably exactly where they need to be. But there's some graphic details. You can find that on the internet if you want to. But of course, the issue that always comes up is that whether or not there's any mental issues with these individuals, because what parent logically does these kind of things to their children? There's people out there that believe that, you know, they basically could have mental issues because of the fact that they thought they were protecting their children from a horrible society by keeping them locked up. Or perhaps it was just a misguided attempt to keep the children in line. I mean, sometimes parents will chastise their children in a way that's actually a violation of the law. And clearly under these circumstances, it certainly is. But then again, we'll let the courts finally decide exactly what to do with them. From what I understand also, the kids are no longer, obviously, they're not in their care because they're incarcerated, but from right now, the 13 children. And by the way, these children range in age from 2 years old to 29 years of age. That's why one of the accounts is against them as an adult, because that person was apparently being held also. But they've got them out there. They're not living with them, obviously, and they're living in 3 separate homes in Riverside County. So, at any rate, I think that's fantastic. So now hopefully these kids will start trying to adjust to life the way it should be and not the way their parents had intended to be. Because obviously if the judicial system has anything to do with it, they'll never see the light of day again. And they'll be behind bars for the rest of their lives. And the children hopefully through psychological and counseling, et cetera, will hopefully be able to lead productive lives. You know, I'll tell you something. Every time we hear about child abuse in any form, we're always shocked. But if you think about it, what do people do, you know, about any of this? Well, we have mandated reporters in the school system, and people that are friends of the court, so to speak, police officers, firemen, et cetera. So we do have people out there that are looking out for these children as best we can. But it's probably still not enough, because I'm going to tell you the prevalence of child sexual abuse is difficult to determine because really it's often not reported. And there's experts out there that agree that the incidence is far greater than what is reported to the authorities. It's sad but true. Now, there's been some studies out there. Now, I want you to hear this. You're talking 1 in 5 girls and 1 in 20 boys is a victim of child sexual abuse. 1 in 5? Now, there's some self-report studies out there that show 20% of adult females and 5 to 10% of adult males recall a childhood sexual assault or sexual abuse incident. Another stat, during a one-year period in the United States, 16% of youths between the ages of 14 to 17 have been sexually victimized. Over the course of their lifetime, they say 28% of the youths in the United States ages 14 to 17 had been sexually victimized. And children, we know, are most vulnerable between the ages of 7 and 13 because they're not in control of anything. Now, there's been some surveys out there over the years, and some of them have reported that 3 out of 4 adolescents who have been sexually assaulted were victimized by someone they knew, somebody they knew. And we're not going to get into, look, there's a lot on the news right now about what's going on, you know, with the Catholic Church and the sexual abuse and things of that nature. That's all over the place right now. And hopefully they're going to be seeking some remedies and try to how to avoid that, et cetera. But, you know, this information is coming out now, and I think that that's a good thing. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is not a new issue. There was a study done way back in 1986, that found that 63% of women who had suffered sexual abuse by a family member also reported a rape or attempted rape after the age of 14. And guess what? Recent studies, they're giving us the same results. So this is consistent. Parents, you got to watch your kids. You got to know what's going on. But more importantly, don't you be one of the ones that are abusing these kids, clearly. If you even think about doing something like this, you need to seek psychological counseling. Because I'm going to tell you, according to everything I've seen in the research, children who had experience of rape or attempted rape in their adolescence were 13.7 times more likely to experience rape or attempted rape in the first year of college. Now, how that correlates, I don't know, other than the fact that possibly a person may have a conversation with people, tell people about these kind of things. I don't know. But those are the stats. Now, they say children who do not live with both parents, as well as children living in homes marked by parental discord, divorce, or domestic violence, have a higher risk of being sexually abused. Higher risk when there's domestic violence, divorce, or parents who can't get along. Now, they say in the vast majority of cases where there's credible evidence that a child has been penetrated, only between 5 and 15% of those children will have genital injuries consistent with sexual abuse. So again, you know, it's hidden. You got to be very careful with that. Child sexual abuse is not solely restricted by physical contact, though I want to make sure you're aware of that. Abuse can also include non-contact abuse, such as exposure, voyeurism, and child pornography. Child pornography. For those of you that are managers out there or business owners out there, you need to make sure that your computers at work have the firewalls to stop people from being able to go to these child porno sites. We had one situation with a client where the FBI walked in one day and arrested an employee of my client, threw the handcuffs on him, and started packing up his work computer. And the owner of the company said, "Hey, what are you doing?" They said, "Well, we're arresting Mr. So-and-so because he has been engaged in child pornography and he's been using your computer to go online." And that's why they took the computer as well, because they were going to get into that hard drive and there was going to be evidence against this individual. And the employer, of course, fired him right on the spot. But you have to be careful about that, people. Because remember something, in California, you cannot fire somebody just based on an arrest because he hasn't been convicted of anything. Cannot fire him. It's only an arrest. He gets his day in court. So, of course, he tried to sue the employer. Eventually, he lost because the way we handled it, we kind of kept pushing it until he actually got convicted, and then everything dropped at that point. Let's put it that way. At any rate, look, in comparison to those with no history of sexual abuse, young males who were sexually abused were 5 times more likely to cause teen pregnancy, 3 times more likely to have multiple sex partners, and 2 times more likely to have unprotected sex. So that's interesting. There's some journals out there. Journal of Adolescent Health is probably a good magazine that's out there for people to actually be able to read it. And keep up with some of this as well, because again, this is things that you don't normally see unless it's something on a grand scale you know, such as the situations with the Catholic Church and the, you know, and all of the allegations that have been coming out over the last couple of years. It's a big deal. It really honestly is. Now, you look at these things and say, okay, you know, when it's a relative, not a relative, and there's some child abuse going on here, but when you look at it and say, okay, parents, this business about child abuse, how can you abuse your own child? But I'll tell you, the research is out there. According to the estimation of the United States Department of Health and Human Resources, listen to this, there are over 3.7 million child abuse cases. 3.7 million. And when we talk about child abuse, people, just keep in mind, it's not just physical, as I told you. It also involves things like neglect and emotional abuse as well. And that neglect, leaving somebody home, remember about leaving your kids in the car, you know, you roll the window down a little bit, but it's 100 degrees outside. There's cases on that where parents have actually gotten in trouble. They've gotten arrested doing those things. Now, you may not mean to do that. It may be by accident. That's, you know, with this, you know, neglect, negligence. But that doesn't matter because they're always going to seek to protect the children first. So keep that in mind. Keep it in mind. You've seen it on the news where you've seen police officers smashing windows to get into the car to let kids out. Same thing with pets. They've done it with pets as well. Focus today is not on pets, but it's on children. All right. Now, let's take a little deeper, dig a little deeper into what is abusive parenting. Because I don't know if you've heard that terminology yet, so let me explain that abusive parenting has different meanings and interpretations, so you have to understand that. It can actually be with an adult or a child, all right? Because sometimes what happens is that the adult is not able to care for themselves, etc. So now they talk about the fact that there's 10 vital signs of child abuse. 10 vital signs of abuse in children. 10. Here you go. Behavioral changes. Keep in mind that the first thing a kid gets affected after an abuse is none other than his or her behavior. An abused kid often appears anxious, scared, aggressive, depressed, and withdrawn. If you notice these signs, then know that there's something wrong. This to me is goes back to knowing your child. If your child is a happy-go-lucky child and all of a sudden they're withdrawn, they're depressed, etc., like I just told you, especially around certain individuals, something is going on. And don't listen to that adult that's giving you some excuse. Talk to the child. Get the child away separately and try and find out what's going on. Because if you do it in the presence of the person that's victimizing him, that's going to be a problem. They're not going to open up and tell you because they're afraid of that person. So if you have to get them away, go for a ride, do whatever you have to do, or talk to them when the other person's not around to try and find out what's going on. So just watch those behavioral changes. Another issue that comes up is unexplained injuries. If a kid experiences physical abuse, you're going to observe unexplained bruises or burns in different shapes. You might even have some unconvincing explanations. But let me just tell you, that's why the schools will look for those things. They'll look for bruises. They'll ask children, how did you get that bruise? If they turn around and say, well, my parent was upset with me, their mother, their dad, whoever it might be, and spanked them or did this or did that, they'll look into it because, wow, they're mandated reporters. They've got no choice. That's their job. I had a secretary one time that got in trouble because her child, she got upset with him and slapped him or did something to him. And he went to school that day. When she got home, the authorities are right there waiting for her. So I'm telling you, it's serious business. You may not intend it. And look, this business about chastising your children, I get it. I understand it. I mean, I had to raise boys. You know, you got to be able to keep them under control. It's just that simple. But I'll tell you, if spanking your child is child abuse, my father would have been doing life imprisonment because we were all boys. I have a sister also. She was younger. She got away with everything. But in terms of the boys, my father was a truck driver. Man, if we stepped out of line, man, he'd get that strap in a second to help keep us straight. Now, we all turned out okay, no doubt about it. But these days, you just have to be extremely careful. Now, if you have a child, the third one is if you have a child that's basically scared to go home. Child doesn't want to go home. You know, he's at the school, doesn't want to go home. An abused kid might express anxiety or apprehension while leaving school or going somewhere with the individual who's doing the abusing. Watch out for that. And again, remember something. It doesn't have to be the immediate family. It could be somebody else. And all of a sudden, the child is shying away. He doesn't want to go over to his uncle's house or his auntie's house or this house or that house. So keep an eye on it, all right? And especially if he's scared to go home and he's communicating that to somebody and they call you to say, hey, you know, something's going on, look into it. Now, hopefully you're not going to be the one. But the reality is, if it's going on, you got to deal with it. This is serious business. People go to jail behind this. But more importantly, look at the psychological damage to the child. If you got any comments on this, give me a call. 818-602-4929. Eating pattern changes is number five. Fear, anxiety, and stress caused by abusing also leads to change in kids' eating pattern. If this is the case, I'm telling you, there's only two things that can happen. The kid's going to lose weight or he gains weight, because sometimes it's the opposite. So sometimes they just keep eating, they just keep eating. Other times they just stop eating. So whatever their pattern is, they change. So watch for the change. So if there's a change, talk to the kid. Find out what's going on. The next one is changes in sleep patterns. It's another vital sign to note. An abused child is, you know, how do they sleep? They're not sleeping like they used to. They're not content. They're up in the middle of the night. Watch for changes in the sleeping patterns. They'll have nightmares as well and may have difficulty falling asleep. So that's why they're always tired and fatigued. You know that you put them down to sleep at 8 o'clock, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the next morning, it seems like they're still extremely tired, etc. Find out what's going on. Nightmares might be easy because they might cry out in the middle of the night. Make an inquiry. What was the nightmare about? What's going on? Show them some comfort and love at that point. Number seven, well, that's got to do with performance in school. You know. Fortunately, a teacher might be able to differentiate to see what's going on with the child, because here all of a sudden the child is a straight-A student, and all of a sudden the performance starts heading downhill, both in academic subjects as well as sports. The reason for that is that they're having a hard time concentrating. So that's changing as well. So you might actually get a call from the teachers, or it might be parents' night, whatever the case may be. You're seeing the grades are slipping. Find out what's going on. Number eight, lack of hygiene or personal care. Neglected and abused kids might seem uncared. He or she might be consistently dirty or having a body odor. Now, look, most kids, the parents are the one controlling the taking your bath, taking your shower, things of that nature. So I think that one might be a little bit more harder to detect. All right. So number nine has to do with behavior. They take too many risks. Why are they taking so many risks? Youths who are being abused might engage in some high-risk activities. And you know what those are, parents? Those are the ones you don't even want to think about, because it involves alcohol and drugs, using weapons, things of that nature. Look, you know, I do a lot of work with the domestic terrorism piece, and I look at some of these school shooters, and I see some of the things that they've done. And these patterns I'm talking about right in here fit some of those kids like a glove. Not all of them, but some of them fits these kids like a glove. So these things can have far-reaching effects, not just, okay, with the things that I just told you about. Some of these kids can turn into school shooters. And obviously you don't want that. That's why sometimes when some of these things do happen, some of the parents are completely shocked. I wasn't aware. I never thought that he would do it. I never thought she would do it. And yes, there's been female school shooters also. All right? Those more than that. Now you have to look at this and say, my God, why do these parents abuse their children? Why would they do that? Like I said, I raised boys. I never abused them. I was a disciplinarian. Now, I know that they have where parents now will do this timeout, you know, this timeout thing, you know, timeout, you know. So if they're five, it's 5 minutes, six minutes, whatever the case may be. I guess that works for some people. Other people don't have that kind of patience. Timeout doesn't always work, I guess. But, hey, you got to get to know your child and what, you know, what strings to pull. These days, you can tell them no computer, take their cell phone away, take all these little fabulous technology toys that they have, take it away, whatever you got to do. Back in my day, they ground you and no TV. You know, those things, they work. Child abuse, you know, you got to understand, child abuse leaves scars for a lifetime. Kids grow up with fear in an unclear state of mind, so the psychologists say. They will neither be able to socialize themselves nor lead a healthy life. And believe it or not, abusive parenting is something that often goes secretly in our society. Sometimes you have no idea. Sometimes you find out after a couple divorces, and now the one that wasn't that way confesses that the person was that way. So yeah, outsiders might not even notice it because it all happens behind closed doors. I can tell you one thing that's clear is that no matter what role people play in the society or the way they appear, parents from various backgrounds can turn abusive. This crosses all barriers. All barriers. Gender, race, national origin, all barriers. This is not limited to any specific ethnic group. All right? Now, when we ask that question about why the parents abuse their children, the first thing that the psychologists look at, the relationship. Because an abusive parent is more likely to position himself or herself as someone who wants his or her kids to be feared. To be feared. This is when they start using different intimidation forms to influence and control their own kids. What actually happens is their kids won't be able to build a safe and trusted relationship with them. A child will always be confused as to what will happen further or how his or her parent is going to behave. He or she eventually experiences freeze, flight, or fight on a daily basis. So your relationship with your children have got to be one that's nurturing. And I know some, listen, like I said, I've raised boys. I understand. And sometimes it gets to be tough. You know, but even with that, you know, it's not just the boys, it's girls. I mean, you hear the stories about girls and mothers not getting along. You know, I mean, it's tough being a parent. For those of you out there that don't have kids, your time will come. Trust me when I tell you. And when it does, patience has got to be a part of your vocabulary and your behavior as well. Because being impatient is going to be problematic and have negative results. Now, the other thing is that there's another problem with this abuse is unrealistic expectations. And that one to me is just as sad. Few people get into parenthood with improbable expectations. And, you know, they might be surprised the kind of attention and care infants and kids require. Now, some people are young. They have babies early. They're kids themselves. And that's the sad part because they don't know how to raise them. They don't know what to do. They're just kids themselves. And it's especially true for immature adults or teen parents. Now, they've done studies out there that claim that parents might turn abusive when they are angry due to a kid who is finding it hard to handle things, or when he or she is handicapped. That's another issue about patience and impatience, because the child has a handicap, whether it's a mental handicap or a physical handicap. And now the person has to be, quote unquote, saddled with this individual. Maybe they can't lead the life that they want to lead. Hey, this is still your child. You got to deal with it. It's very simple. The kid may require more time. May require more of your attention. But you know what? You brought them into the world. You brought them into the world. Now you got to take the responsibility to be able to assist them. Now, number three to this is if the parent, him or herself, has experienced abusive in childhood. And they say that adults who have suffered ill treatment or abuse in their childhood are likely to turn violent on their own kids. This is because the kind of family environment they have grown up was flawed. And similarly, if parents grew up with a cruel discipline method, they might be prone to aggression as well. Now look, do you have any doubts about any of this? I would encourage you to get some therapy. There's parenting classes out there as well. It's out there. Seek it out. Remember the influence that you could have on your child's life could be far-reaching, and not just with their not just with your child. Your behavior with your child could start a trend so that your child starts down the same path that you started down with them. So now it starts to free fall through the generations, through your descendants, all because of you. Now look, there are parents out there with violent histories, and I'm telling you, the cycle of violence or abuse can start even before the baby is born, before that child is born, especially if the mother, as an example, is an alcoholic, drug abuser, or fails to acquire proper prenatal health care in their pregnancy period. Believe it or not, such parents build violent households on their own. They start assuming this is how a family should operate. Discipline for such parents always means yelling, anger, or aggression. Come on. I'll tell you another one. Parents with financial problems. Unemployment and financial problems easily make parents, you know, feel that their kids are a burden on them. They can't take care of them, so they get upset, as if it's their fault. These situations do create tension and anger and frustration. And this is exactly the phase that parents start to abuse their children. When they start to have problems, it all flows downhill. This is wrong, people. Don't take it out on the children. It's not their fault. Think about this, lack of proper support. Because you know what? We all know the parenting is not as easy as it sounds. It is stressful. However, this shouldn't be shown to the kids. Now, parents without proper support from friends and family are more likely to abuse their kids. And if this is the case, there are many hotlines, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that are out there. Call one of them. Let's get these numbers down. I gave you the statistics on the millions of kids that suffer from child abuse. It starts right there in the home, chances are. Take a look at yourself. Next one is drug abuse. Drug and alcohol abuse. Drug and alcohol is going to lead to abusive behavior in parents because these make humans lose self-control. And you'd be surprised to read the fact that parents who are involved in substance abuse will be 3 times likely to abuse their own kids and 4 times likely to ignore them. Yep. And I'll tell you, kids of single parents are at a greater risk for the reason that there isn't a second parent in the house who can diffuse the circumstance or guard the kid from the abuse. Sad. Now, the other area you have to be careful of, and why they abuse the kids, because of emotional disorders. Emotional disorders. And this is an important reason you need to make a note of. Parents who are struggling with bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety disorder, or some other mental illness are less likely to handle the parenting stress. And believe me, for those of you to raise kids, you know what I'm talking about regarding the stress of raising children. This easily makes them to involve in child abuse. Parents with such disorders will have difficulties caring themselves. When they cannot care for themselves, how do we expect them to be able to care for others? They might be neglectful, withdrawn, angry, and violent most of the time. Listen, I've known people who have turned around as grandparents and taken their kids and raised their grandkids because of the household situation that these children may have been in from their own children for different reasons. Sometimes people meet people in their life and everything changes. Everything changes. Now, parental situations, a child cannot choose his or her parents, people. They didn't have a choice. Majority of people say that the way a child has been parented will have an important impact on how he or she will raise or bring up their own children. Even the United States Department of Health and Human Resources has commented on that. It said that there's a weak connection between abused adults and becoming abusers of their offspring. There are certain situations which are said to push parents to become perpetrators. And I'll tell you what those are. They say that these are the issues that may have pushed them to become perpetrators. When they did not graduate from high school, when they have financial problems, when they are stressed and extremely depressed about something, if they are a single parent, when they themselves are involved in drugs or alcohol, and when they are unemployed. All of the reasons listed above kind of recaps what I just told you. All right? So, look, child abuse is always going to be looked upon negatively in our society. Don't be a perpetrator. You don't want to be, you know, being charged with these kind of crimes, because now you're going to be in there with a jury of your peers and you don't know who's sitting in that box. And it, one thing I want you to keep in mind is, how does abuse affect a child? Because that is important. And again, I've already stressed physical abuse, emotional abuse. If a child has been physically abused, you should see him or her with broken bones, bruises, or even worse. So keep an eye out. All right? You want to prevent child abuse? Set yourself as a good example and be a friend to your child. Be a friend. I know we're the parent, but you set a good example and you be a friend to your child. And if you notice something is wrong, handle it. Go to the authorities. I can tell you there's situations where police officers, as a police officer, you go to these homes and some of these people, you know, want to tell you, well, I can't control my husband. My husband's doing this. My husband's doing that. Or vice versa. With a wife. Listen, the child comes first. For some people in their relationship, they don't look at it that way. They look at it like that spouse comes first, not when it comes to your children. Okay. I think I've given you enough on the child abuse piece. So let's talk about some other areas here as well, you know, about this issue of violent crimes against children. Now, look, it's unthinkable, but every year thousands of children become victims of crimes. And we're talking kidnapping as well, violent attacks, and also online predators. Look, I you know, you've heard me mention this before about watching out for the computer and what your children are doing on the computer. Because this business about filing violent crimes against children, you're talking about abductions, you're talking about sexual exploitation, and contact offenses as well. And don't forget trafficking of child pornography, distribution of child pornography, and possession of child pornography. You get caught with child pornography, you're going to jail. And I'm going to tell you something. These guys up there, in the big house, as some people call it, they don't like child predators. I'm telling you that right now. You do not want to be in jail as a child predator, because bad things will happen to you when you get behind those bars. Now, I want to talk to you about abductions, because that's important also. And what's funny is when I was looking at this, and I don't say funny, but when I was looking at this, I had to reflect back on a situation where one of my sons was almost abducted in a grocery store. And basically what happened was, my wife was out of shopping, was out grocery shopping. She had him sitting in the cart, and had stepped away from the cart. You know how you look, you're looking at different items on the shelf. She was looking for a specific item that she wanted on the shelf, and had stepped about 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 feet away from the basket. Well, she found what she was looking for. She takes it off the shelf and turns to go back to the basket, but our son was sitting there, and here was a man that had picked him up. And of course she started screaming and hollering, and he set him back down and ran out of the store. I mean, look, that's in a grocery store with people around. But a child is not going to say anything. A baby's not going to say anything, because the baby's just going to be held and the person walks out of the store. You got to keep an eye on your children. These abductions, now there's two types of abductions, by the way. There's the family abduction and also the non-family abduction. So kind of keep that in mind. Now, the family abduction, just to be clear, occurs when a child is taken wrongfully retained or concealed by a parent or other family member, depriving another individual of their custody or visitation rights. In some circumstances, family abductions can be considered a crime under federal and state law. And criminal look, these criminal statutes vary across the country, to be perfectly honest with you. And there's a number of preventative steps parents may choose to take if they fear that a family member may attempt to abduct their child. Now, look, there's times on the news when we've seen where a person now has been rediscovered that was taken 20 years ago by a nanny or by this or by that, and now all of a sudden here's the person that's been found. These situations happen, family abductions. It's also common when you have a divorce situation and they're fighting for custody. I've got clients that that have preschools and also schools from grades 1 through 12, and these are issues because the non-custodial parent will want to come up to the school and take the person or see the person, but the school will have on file the paperwork as to who can visit these children and who cannot. So if you're in that situation, you need to let the school know exactly any restrictions on who can pick up the child and who cannot. And like I said, this situation is where a lot of these schools right now will have a list of who can pick them up. I remember I had to pick up my granddaughters when my son and his and my daughter-in-law went out of town for a weekend, and my wife and I had to go up to the school and pick them up. Well, they had our names on the list. So you have to be careful because you got to – and the other thing, obtain a custody determination from the court, which specifically outlines the custody and visitation rights. So if you're having a problem with your significant other, all right, let's say you're not married, or if you are married, get something from the court that lays it out. Because if you don't do that, then it's going to be subject to, you know, if you want to report the person, you know, through the criminal justice system, so you want a police report. Well, if you don't have the papers that show that you're the one that has custody of this child, that's going to be problematic for you. Now, you can also request that the judge include abduction prevention measures in the description of the visitation rights, such as supervised visitation. So you can do that as well. All right. These are suggestions, by the way. I'm not giving you legal advice. I'm throwing that disclaimer in there. Now, there's other things that you can do. You can post a bond, entering a child's name in the passport insurance alert program and surrendering a child's passport to the court, because you have to remember, some people have relationships with people that are foreign, foreign nationals. So therefore, here's the mother will say that's an American citizen, but we'll say the father is, just for the sake of, you know, picking a European. So now the child has a passport because they've traveled back and forth. But now the relationship has gone sour, so you can actually put something out there. Because if they travel, they're going to need that passport. So there's a travel alert program to advise them. And, of course, always advise the child's school or daycare of custody orders. All right? Now, if a court order prohibits a child's removal from the country, enroll him or her in the preventive departure program. And I'll repeat that. Enroll that child. So if you have a child and you're back and forth across the border out of the country, you can enroll your child in the prevent departure program. All right? And as well, but you need the court order for that. Okay? So make sure you have your court order. And then enroll their name in that program. And if they're crossing the border, we'll say, then that's going to be problematic because of the fact that their child's name is going to pop up. Now, look, I'm going to tell you something. There are some risk factors that you should be aware of with these family abductions, because these situations and conditions may increase the risk that a family member may abduct a child. Just remember that the absence of any of the following does not mean that abduction will not occur. These are risk factors I'm going to give you and include having a family member who, one, has previously abducted or threatened to abduct a child. So if you've got those threats, you got to act on it. If the person has a history of marital instability, lack of cooperation with the other parent, domestic violence, or child abuse. All right? So just think, these conditions may increase the risk of them snatching a child. If the person has a criminal record, if the person has stronger ties to a different state, province, or country than those to where they currently reside. And you hear about these stories about people taking their child with custody and then going to other countries with them. Now, if the person has no job, can work anywhere, is financially dependent, those are situations where it poses a risk. Now, if all of a sudden the person is engaged in planning activities such as quitting their job, selling a home, closing accounts, hiding or destroying documents, purchasing travel tickets for your child, altering their appearance, or applying for renewed or duplicate documents for the child, such as passports, birth certificates, or school and medical records, That's telling you, that's warning you, something is going on. And it may be common sense, but that's what's happening. Okay? So watch out for that. Now, those are family abductions. But keep in mind, they also have non-family abductions. And now I'm going to give you a little history. Way back in 1932, Charles Lindbergh, for those of you too young to even know about Charles Lindbergh, he was the one that first crossed the transatlantic flight across the ocean in an airplane. So he was the first one to do it. So he was famous as an aviator. Well, his child, his 20-month-year-old son, was abducted from the home at night. At night. And a ransom note was found. And eventually a person 2 years later was actually arrested for the crime. He was found guilty of first-degree murder because the child was killed. The body was found. So even that the fact that they had paid the money, and they ended up tracing the money, okay, the money was marked, and they ended up tracing it back to this individual, and he was eventually electrocuted, all right? He was given the death penalty. But as a result of that, they created the Federal Kidnapping Act. So it's very strict guidelines. And the act forbids the transportation of any person in interstate or foreign commerce, kidnapped or otherwise unlawfully detained. All right? And it's a felony. The act itself is a felony. So that was a good thing. But it wasn't good for the Lindberghs, but you understand what I'm saying. As a result of that, they acted upon this. And now, like I said, they got the Federal Kidnapping Act. Now, there are agreements between countries on this issue as well. So if somebody takes a child to has abducted them and takes them to a foreign country, whether it is a parent or a non-parent, these countries are working together on this. This really is a big issue. All right? So they're working together and trying to get the child returned, but they're subject to the local jurisdictions with all of this as well of other countries. Other countries don't have the same laws in place that we do. But they have something called the Hague Convention, H-A-G-U-E, and you can look it up. You know, it was an agreement among, you know, these different various states as well as these countries about, the requirements of returning a child, about these child abduction situations, for sure. The last piece I'm going to be able to get to, you know, when you start talking about helping to keep kids safe, people, custodial parents should inform the schools, aftercare facilities, babysitters, everybody, okay? You can't put enough safeguards in place for the protection of your children. So make sure that you follow some of the guidelines that I gave you. Now, I'm going to tell you another one also, and that's online enticement. Online enticement. Online enticement involves an individual communicating with someone believed to be a child via the internet, with the internet to commit a sexual offense or abduction. Now look, this is a broad category of online exploitation. It includes sextortion, all right? Sextortion, in which a child is being groomed to take sexually explicit images or ultimately meet face-to-face with someone for sexual purposes or to engage in sexual conversations online. And this is what I tell you, parents, please check your children on this internet, all right? Make sure you've got a way to be, and this thing, if this stuff is password protected, you got to tell them, I need to know your password. Now, you know, some of these young teenagers are going to talk about the fact that you're invading my privacy. Don't listen to that. There's something going on. You know, you're not trying to invade their privacy. You're trying to help protect them. Because the type of victimization that takes place across every platform, social media, messaging apps, gaming platforms, it's all out there. I'll repeat that. What I'm talking about takes place across every platform, social media, messaging apps, and gaming platforms. This is online enticement to get your child. And the most common tactics used to entice children, it includes engaging in sexual conversations and playing as a grooming method rather than a goal. Asking a child for sexually explicit images like I just told you. Developing a rapport through compliments, discussing shared interests, or liking their online post. That's also known as grooming. Sending or offering sexually explicit images of themselves And some of them will pretend to be younger. They'll act like they're also 14 years old, and they're not. And they'll also offer an incentive such as gift cards, alcohol, drugs, lodging, and transportation of food as well. All right? Okay, look, my time is up. But I at least wanted you to understand some of this. Next week, I'm going to continue because I want to talk to you about this child sex trafficking as well. And never ceases to amaze me. It seems like the time just kind of just blows by. But all right, you've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio, and it's time to close out the show. But let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Again, that's twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Be sure to join me next week. And if you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, and please be safe.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.